Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Come on, show me the magic.
Can I take you out to the pictures?
Well, I hope you'll come and see me in the movies.
What a scene
of your Hollywood song.
Hello, and welcome to the Beatles Films Podcast. I'm Matt Looker.
I'm Ed Williamson.
And we're back. Well, officially we're back next week with the start of a new season, discussing a whole new selection of movies about, starring, or inspired by the Beatles. However, it didn't feel right to kickstart a new run of episodes without first addressing the big news that has arrived since the last time we got together. As the world's leading and only Beatles Films podcast, it would be remiss of us if we didn't spend some time talking about the announcement of actual Beatles films. That announcement, of course, is that Sam Mendes will be directing 4 films that chronicle the Beatles' career, each from the viewpoints of John, Paul, George and Ringo, and with the plan for all films to be released in cinemas in 2027. As the press release states, the project marks the first time Apple Corps Limited and the Beatles, Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, and the families of John Lennon and George Harrison have granted full life story and music rights for a scripted film. So let's chat about what we know so far and what we expect and hope to see as the project develops over the next, 3 years. I guess, first of all, it's not a surprise, is it, that this has been announced? I mean, it is a surprise. We weren't expecting it to happen, but we've been talking a long time about the fact that with recent music biopics coming out more and more, we had Bohemian Rhapsody, Elvis, obviously, recently. I mean, a month or so ago, we had Bob Marley and One Love and Rocket Man as well. It just felt like there must be conversations happening behind the scenes that now is a good time for them to start thinking about what a Beatles biopic might look like.
Yeah, this was always going to happen. We kind of knew it was coming. And I suppose a lot of fans approached it with a sense of dread almost.
Yeah.
That they're bound to do this and they're bound to get it wrong is kind of what everyone thinks, you know. And so I suppose it was quite nice when the news was announced and people generally seemed to greet it in an open-minded way, which I wasn't expecting necessarily. Like I said, we knew this was going to come and I kind of thought that when it did happen, a lot of fans do tend to greet these things as they instinctively dislike the idea that anyone is going to step into the Beatles' shoes and pretend to be them, you know?
Yeah.
The idea being that this idea is so fixed in my head and so perfect, because it was perfect, that anything else is just bound to kind of sully that, you know? So it's nice that it's sort of been greeted a bit more positively than that, you know?
I wonder if a part of that is that everyone likes the idea of Beatles biopic. I wonder if the negativity will come when the film starts coming into fruition and we start seeing things like casting news and details about the story and obviously ultimately the actual release of the film.
Yeah.
Because I think the reason why sometimes there's a negative reaction to these things is because what is actually created doesn't match what fans have in their heads. as should be the case. There's always, oh, you missed out this detail, or you missed out, you know, or you skipped over what I consider to be a very important part of the Beatles story and stuff. And that's where that sort of negativity starts to breed. At the moment, we have very little information to go on. So just generally the idea of a Beatles film project is fun.
Yes. And I think also the fact that what has been announced is quite intriguing.
Yeah.
It's not just we're going to do a film, or even we're going to do four films. It's we're going to do four films in a very specific way, and this guy has a very specific and quite bold idea for how to do it. We don't know what that idea is, but we are assured by sort of Sam Mendes' people and the people at Sony that this is going to be something quite different. I think he said he was excited to challenge the notion of what constitutes a trip to the movies.
And yeah.
Sony described it as a daring, large-scale idea. So that kind of implies there's something more going on here.
And I think the really heartening thing about that is we've often said before when the subject has come up that to explore the Beatles story on film properly, you wouldn't be able to do that in a single film.
Yeah.
Which is why we have things like Nowhere Boy and Backbeat. And sort of movies that tend to be more dedicated to sort of a specific era in time,
yeah,
or a particular angle. For example, like where we look at the documentaries that we've discussed in the past, and it's approaching the subject matter from a particular way. And I think even without knowing what Sam Mendes' idea is, and really being able to agree on how bold and innovative it is, I think there's hope then that they're kind of addressing that as a main concern. You know, realizing that the Beatles story is too big to tell in one, even 3-hour film, and the fact that it has to be split across four, I think it's heartening to hear that, because it feels like that main concern is inherently addressed in the idea itself.
Yeah, I think, because ideally you want something that honors the idea that the Beatles are somehow set apart from other bands and somehow transcend the idea of the band origin story from you know, the rags to riches story kind of thing. And I think maybe a sort of multi-perspective film, which kind of that is what has been hinted at, that these films will each be told from the perspective of one band member. I think maybe a multi-perspective film series could do that almost in a sort of metaphysical way, you know, just kind of get round the idea or get across the idea that this was somehow different to other bands, you know. And maybe, you know, because I think of, I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody is a really flawed but incredibly fun film.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed watching it. As far as I'm concerned, it does a perfectly serviceable job of telling the whole story of the band Queen in 2 hours or however long it is.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there will be people who are as big Queen fans as I am a Beatles fan, who think, no, there's so much more richness and depth to this that this film can't get across, and you couldn't in 2 hours. And fair enough. So it may be that when I say this needs to treat the Beatles as though they're completely different from other bands, you know, there'll be fans of Ed Sheeran who would say the same. You know, the Ed Sheeran surely story.
It was told in that one cameo in Yesterday.
That's true.
That's all you need to know. So I mean, let's dig into that a little bit, because I think, you know, as much as this announcement, it wasn't necessarily a surprise because we were expecting something like this to come. Yeah, the idea that all four films were released in 1 year and that they are told from different viewpoints.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing for us to speculate about, right? How is that going to work? In my mind, the two options on the table are you have the entire Beatles career told in each film, or the same timeline is presented in each film, but with a certain emphasis in different films, depending on whether it matters most to that particular band member.
Yeah.
Or the alternative way to go is you have a phase one, phase two, phase three, and phase four of the Beatles story, and each sort of defining era of their career is taken from the viewpoint of a member at a time.
Yeah.
I think there are definite pros and cons to both of those approaches.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about this, but if we took the latter example, and the story itself was split up in four parts, and each band member took a lead part in that, I think automatically that means that it would start with a John film.
Uh-huh.
But we've already got sort of early Beatles days films from the perspective of John already. So I think that's problematic in itself. I don't know how you would go about saying that a certain period within the Beatles' career means more to one particular band member than any other.
Mm.
So that's, I think that's problematic.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you go down the other route, I think the idea of presenting to a general cinema-going audience the idea that we are going to be telling what is essentially the same story, but from different viewpoints,
yeah,
I think that's going to be quite a big risk, and I'm not sure how a studio would back that,
yeah,
because by the time you get to what film four fatigue is setting.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I kind of think that doing the whole story four times from four different perspectives, I mean, obviously, when you describe it like that, it sounds terrible. But I mean,
yeah,
but of course, it wouldn't literally be that. There'd be some twist in the way they did it. But even that feels a bit much. And I think that because the early Beatles has been covered in film much more than the rest of their career, and for good narrative reasons as well, because it's the one that's the least documented in footage, so you have the least amount to live up to, if you know what
yes,
I mean.
True,
you don't
yeah.
have to recreate things quite as faithfully, that kind of thing. And there's more ambiguity, you know. And so things like, you know, the hours and times, which we did an episode about, the ambiguity between what happened on John Lennon and Brian Epstein's Spanish holiday in 1963 is, that ambiguity is really made a virtue in that film. And they kind of use that ambiguity to create a space in which to tell a story that isn't necessarily resting on whether this is true or false, kind of thing, you know. I mean, I think probably a way to do it, I was thinking about how you would do this with different perspectives, and I kind of started in the middle and I thought, well, if you did the studio years from Ringo's perspective, because mm-hmm. he was, it's not to be unkind to him, but like by his own admission, but let's say in the Sgt. Pepper sessions, he was kind of an observer for quite a lot of that.
Mm.
He describes like learning to play chess on set because he didn't have a lot to do.
Yeah.
And he spent a lot of time waiting just to go in and do his drum part, which didn't take very long, and then he was waiting. So you can kind of see him being a bit detached and being a kind of useful audience surrogate.
Yeah.
And that's one of Ringo's many great values to the Beatles in general, is the idea that he's a kind of everyman who's the way that we can understand what it's like to be in a room with three geniuses, because there's an ordinary guy there who is incredibly talented, but you know, not a genius, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And is kind of able to be our eyes and ears into that kind of thing. So you could then maybe do George's perspective for the touring years as he grows increasingly dissatisfied with the fame and all the rest of it. That would be an interesting angle. Maybe, let's say, Paul's perspective on the breakup years. I think that's the point at which he is becoming a bit separate from the rest of them, particularly with the Alan Klein stuff. And actually, the only bit that dissatisfies me about that is it kind of means that you do the retelling of the early years through John,
but I don't know, which has kind of been done.
You know?
And I also don't know. I think if you do take that route, you do have to start the early days of John. It began with John.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel right that you would start the Beatles career with any other member.
Yeah, true.
And he was the leader of the band at that point, you know. So
yeah.
I think the bit that dissatisfies me most about that plan, although it does make a lot of sense when you put it in that order, is that I feel like there's a really interesting story to tell around Paul's sort of burgeoning creativity around the studio years.
Mm.
And it feels like that would be a key focus of a film. And you're right, like actually telling that through the eyes of Ringo is a way to go, but also you couldn't have a film that is just about the studio, you know. Like, I don't know, I guess one of the questions I have about how Sam Mendes is planning to tackle all of this is how do you tell a satisfying narrative in four films, whether that is the overall story or different phase, because I don't know where the drama is going to come from. On a very top line level, there is a story of a band that grew insanely popular very early on and then transitioned from almost like boy band popularity into creative artists, and then how that then spread to individual journeys and solo careers.
Yeah.
I think that there is a view on that, but I'm not entirely sure where the conflict is.
Yeah.
Without doing what I think the Beatles estate won't necessarily want to do and explore the conflict between John and Paul.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, it feels, I guess what I'm getting at is it feels a little bit like in the way that Get Back kind of corrected the negative perception that Let It Be espoused. I can't imagine them wanting to open up a can of worms negatively again with this film project. So there is a quote from Sam Mendes' production partner, Pippa Harris, and she said, "What is truly exciting is for Sam to have the freedom to delve into the lives of each of the Beatles with nothing off limits and no sense of the band wanting him to tell a particular authorised version of their rise to success."
Mm.
I don't really believe that. I don't know about you, but I don't think this is a nothing is off limits type of deal, right?
No.
I think there's going to be a very sort of prescriptive way that everything gets presented. But in doing so, where do you find the balance between that and providing sort of the drama and the conflict that a story needs like this?
Yeah, I do think the multi-perspective thing does at least add, or it provides a way in which you could ensure that there is balance, I suppose. So if you're saying, so for example, you know, when there's a bit of a power struggle between John and Paul at various points, if you see that from both perspectives, then I guess that kind of, if done correctly, irons out the potential problem of a bias towards one or the other, you know, or mm-hmm. an editorial slant, you know. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how that is handled. But I think one thing is that it does kind of present concerns about how to present conflict and resolution in the story. But I'm also very open-minded about the idea that perhaps there doesn't need to be that much conflict and resolution in the story. Perhaps it can just be its own thing, you know. So the thing I was thinking about in terms of what's been announced, the template for it is maybe Krzysztof Kieslowski's Three Colors trilogy from mm-hmm. the early 90s. Now, cards on the table, I've seen one of them. I think blue.
Are you sure which color?
No, I couldn't even remember which color. It was the French one anyway.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
But I am kind of aware, and I sort of sort of semi-studied that film a little bit at university.
Yeah, for about a third.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure I did watch the whole thing, and therefore I think I'm entirely qualified to make this comment. That I think that the way that those films are dealing with... So that is a trilogy of films called Red, White and Blue that are intended to kind of mirror the themes of the French flag and the three things that they're supposed to stand for: liberty, equality, fraternity. And so throughout it, there are characters in there who are doing things quite subtly a lot of the time that are kind of bodying those things, being the personification of those things. In terms of the way the actual stories are interlinked, that is actually quite tangential in that I think there is the point at which someone goes into a courthouse and looks through the courtroom door and there is a scene from one of the other films is going on. That's the thing that I specifically remember. So,
that happened in that one film.
I'm totally an expert in this. But they are not films in which there's lots and lots of plot going on necessarily. You know, what they are doing is just kind of evincing a feeling. Now, I think it would be incredibly bold to do something like that with the Beatles story. But we are being told, I mean, it might be absolute creative suicide, who knows? But
yeah, it's true.
I would be fascinated to see something genuinely bold attempted.
I think that, yeah, no, I would as well. And this is what we're being told in the press release, right? That this is a bold innovation by Sam Mendes. And obviously that's reflected in the release cadence that they're implying with all four films in 1 year.
Yeah, same with Three Colors, which came out. They were released sort of end of 93, and then 3 months later, second one, 3 months later, the third one. So like within sort of 6-8 months of each other.
I guess the interesting thing about that approach is that it does kind of feel like it flies in the face of what we are being led to believe at this point, which is that it is a straight up biopic of the band. This is, you know, we are told it is the story of the Beatles' career.
Yeah.
So I can see what you're saying, that like there's a sort of a creative and artistic license that could be applied here, which allows for some flexibility with what it is we see in each film.
Yeah.
I'm still having struggle picturing how that would all piece together.
Yeah.
But you know, that's part of it. I think we need to understand what the idea is. I can see how you would have a film from each member's perspective where there's actually very little crossover between scenes.
Yes.
So, you know, it might be that the entire Beatles career is told from each person's viewpoint, probably not a lot of Ringo in Rishikesh, for example, right?
Right, yeah.
But maybe the arrival, he tells, and then actually it gets, you know, later on, it gets picked up by one of the other band members' films. I still feel like that presents a problem for presenting this project to an audience who feel like they've seen the whole story.
Yeah.
No matter how cleverly intricate the plotting is between all those four films, ultimately, if you want to get audiences to go to the cinema to see them, you need to convince them that they are going to be seeing something new four times.
Yes, yeah.
And I think that's going to be a difficult sell-in.
Yeah, it's a tough sell, you know, to sort of 3 months later say, come and see this other film, which is the exact same story you've just watched.
Yes.
But like from the perspective of another guy who was in the same room.
Yes, or yeah, exactly. Or, you know, you saw the week where we followed George, but actually in this film, we're going to see the second week after that that's from John's perspective.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like it doesn't, I don't know, the overall story starts and ends with, this is a band that got together, became famous, and then ultimately split up.
Yeah.
Difficult sell. I'm really interested to know how they... Yeah. I'm interested in the creative vision that Sam Mendes has, but also it has to be something that is viable to make it be a commercial success.
Yeah.
You're releasing and marketing four films in 1 year. That has to be a... there has to be a sort of guaranteed bank at the end of that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose one of the things that... Well, I'm very, very interested to see what the idea is, and quite excited in general about the project. I will say the fact that it's Sam Mendes directing all four films doesn't excite me particularly. And while I don't think he's a bad director or anything like that, I think he's made some very good films. I like American Beauty. I really like Road to Perdition.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think with the James Bond films he did, Skyfall is excellent. What was the other one? Spectre. You know, less keen on Spectre. But in general, I think what he demonstrated with the Bond films is that he can take a great British cultural institution and treat it with reverence, but not over reverence.
Yeah,
you know,
I completely agree.
Be happy to sort of pay homage to the bits of it that are important and maintain them, while also doing something different and slightly bold. You know.
Yeah, I mean, and realistically, that is who you want behind the camera with a project like this.
Yeah,
like if this was four films about the Beatles directed by Wes Anderson. I think everyone would be a little bit like, that doesn't seem like a good fit. We, you know, this is, and without wanting to damn Sam Mendes with faint praise, he is a very safe pair of hands when it comes to this kind of project,
yeah,
I think. And I know he obviously rose to fame with a lot of the high-profile films you mentioned there and award-worthy films you mentioned there. But more recently, Empire of Light was a really lovely, charming film. And 1917... was spectacular. Obviously, it had its own gimmick where it was kind of shot as though it was all one take. So you can see where Sam Mendes has a fondness for pushing the envelope a little bit, technically in that kind of respect.
So
I feel like it makes sense that he is behind camera for this one. I mean, it's his idea. This isn't an idea that has come up from the band.
Yeah.
Then they've been shopping around for a filmmaker to do it justice.
Yeah.
It was his idea, and they had to, by his own admission, they went to LA and shopped it around and pitched it to studios.
Yeah.
To apparently, from what he was saying, what he claims, although this is part of the course for press releases, is to universal praise. So it feels like it was a popular idea. And they basically had their pick of studios, and they ultimately went to Sony.
Yeah, and good for him. You know, I wonder if more could be achieved by having him as the sort of general overseer and directing one of them, and then maybe some other British directors actually directing the other three. You know,
I do agree with you. What this says to me is, and this is again, is I guess a fairly large assumption, but by having Sam Mendes direct all four, I would assume that all four films are going to be in production back to back, which makes sense.
Oh yeah, of course.
You know, for four films being released in 1 year.
Yeah.
But what it also says to me is, if there's one director overseeing all of those and all four films are being shot at the same time, it probably lends credence to the idea that this is going to be four films telling the whole story from different viewpoints, because it means that there'll be, I realise I'm extrapolating in a very speculative way, but
that's what we're here for.
No, it's the whole purpose of this episode, right? Yeah. But it does, I think, lend weight to that idea that that's what we're going to end up seeing. Four films that tell the same story from different viewpoints, because we're talking about reusing the same sets, having everyone in the same place for the same shoots and all of that being done at the same time.
Yeah.
Which you just couldn't get if you obviously if you're separating out each film by a different
character. That's true. I suppose in my head it's sort of they're shooting the same scene but there are four cameras. And they say John, Paul, George and Ringo on the cameras so we know which is which. Like an episode of Friends.
Just like they've just cast four people and each of them have a GoPro on their head.
Right, do it like Peep Show actually. Yeah,
yeah
that'd
exactly.
be fantastic. Yeah. Get them in a flat in Croydon.
God, you imagine actually, yeah, that is it's actually from their literal perspective.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
would be
yeah.
great.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One of my main hopes for this project is I feel like we should start up the hashtag Justice for Paul. I think Paul is more due his time for being given an interesting film biopic.
Yes.
I think maybe the challenge, as we've discussed before, will be what is Paul's interesting angle?
Yeah.
Because everyone else kind of has one. But I think there's enough there for Paul to really shine in the project for the first time.
Yeah.
We've never had anything like this. Well, I mean, apart from the Linda McCartney story, which we covered in a previous episode.
Yeah.
That's about as close as we got, I think. But
yeah, that's right. Yeah. He's been played a few times, but I don't think he's ever really been the main character in anything that I can think of, you know. And, you know, it sort of raises the question of, actually, there is the one that we haven't covered yet. It was the BBC TV drama called Lennon Naked, in which Christopher Eccleston was playing John. A sort of then largely unknown Andrew Scott played Paul. Mm. And that you look at that and think, well, maybe Andrew Scott is now slightly too old for it. But, you know, it's not that difficult. I mean, he's obviously a good-looking guy as well. It's not that hard to make him look a bit younger, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, you know, getting into who should play whom is maybe a bit much in terms of speculation, you know. But
again, what are we here for?
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah.
You know, in terms of casting, I think it's interesting because there have been a lot of articles that have gone up around who should play who. All of these things are entirely fruitless and just designed to get clicks onto websites. That's all it is.
It's filler. Yeah.
Completely pointless.
But again, what are we here for?
But I will say that one of the things that I really like about that as well is that, like, inevitably there are lots of websites that will be like, we think that actually a good person that can play George is George Clooney. Or something like, you know, like completely like trying to completely missing any point or correlation between an actor and yeah. It's just wild guesses.
Yeah.
There have been a couple that caught my eye though. I think if Sam Mendes were to go down this route of casting relatively well known faces as the Fab Four, and I think that's a question in itself.
Yeah.
I think that I saw someone pitch Jacob Elordi to play George, which I think would work. He's got a bit of a sort of the brooding, heavier browed look, mm-hmm. I think. And obviously, we know he's a great actor. The one that I liked most was I saw someone pitch the idea of Asa Butterfield as Paul.
Right.
Because he just has that boyish charm, boyish good looks that's sort of inherent to his personality. I think there has been some things already, like in his, I think maybe on social media or something, he knows how to play bass. He does some like bass renditions of that, so he's like,
can you do it left-handed? Fine, sign him up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's fine. It can't be that hard. But yeah, so I think those are some casting choices that I thought, you know, I'd be quite happy with.
Yeah.
But I kind of suspect that Sam Mendes might go down the casting unknowns route.
Yeah, I do. I mean, to be honest, that is probably what I would prefer, Well, yeah. Not so much prefer, but it would be, if I was advising Sam Mendes.
Yeah, I mean, who's to say? I mean, our DMs are open.
That's true. I'm sure he'll hear this and think, these guys have got some ideas.
No one else is talking about this project at the moment. So.
Right, exactly. They haven't named any executive producers. You know, a couple of slots there, surely. You know. But
that's how it works.
Of course, that's 100%.
You just apply.
How the firm business works. Yeah, you apply. They post it on LinkedIn and you apply. but yeah, I think casting unknowns would probably be the obvious way to go. I mean, so we've still got the Midas Man film, the Brian Epstein film, which was, so I think they did some reshoots and now it's in post-production. So I think maybe that should be coming out in the next year or so. Mm-hmm. Brian is obviously the main character in that from what we understand, but there are actors playing all four of the Beatles in that, you know, who are all pretty unknown, I think. So I don't mean I'll just take those guys and do it, but what I mean is it's a good template for, you don't necessarily need stars for these things.
Well, I think I think a better way of maybe looking at it is looking at what Sam Mendes has done in his previous films. I think he has always worked with high profile actors, but I think particularly his last two films, his last two are Empire of Light and 1917. 1917 is probably a good template to compare this one to, because there was already inherently a gimmick to the film, and this project has that already, right? Mm-hmm. There is an IP that has been utilized here for these films that you don't need to cast big names to get people to go to the cinema.
Yeah.
So I think if we take 1917 as a template, what he did there was he cast George MacKay as the main character. But around him in the supporting cast is where you get the high profile names. So there was Andrew Scott, actually, funnily enough, and Colin Firth and Benedict Cumberbatch. And so I can imagine, again, speculating, but I can imagine that a direction that Sam Mendes goes down where he would cast unknowns as the main group, but have more recognizable names as George Martin, Brian Epstein, Alan Klein, for example, and start bringing in sort of bigger names to sort of bolster the cast who would otherwise be surviving on the fact that this is a film about the Beatles, and that's good enough for your general audience.
And you know, whatever happens, if Aunt Mimi's in it, can we have Kristen Scott Thomas back,
yes,
please?
Yes, because she was incredible.
In Nowhere Boy.
That's so good.
I think another route you could go down is, I was thinking about, you could go down the route of sort of slightly mad, perverse casting. Along, so if you think of like Todd Haynes' film, I'm Not There. You remember the Todd Haynes film, I'm Not There, which is about Bob Dylan giving interviews.
Yes, of course. Like
various different actors playing Bob Dylan. So Joaquin Phoenix was one, I think. And certainly Cate Blanchett was one.
Yeah.
So the very act of having a woman playing Bob Dylan immediately means we are not going for photorealism here, and that isn't the point. Like, we're not asking you to sort of suspend your disbelief that this actually is the Beatles, that kind of thing. And I think creatively that could actually be quite freeing, you know. So, I mean, I think I'd heard someone mention once when the prospect of a Prince biopic came up and people were talking about who should play Prince, and someone said Janelle Monáe. And I was like, yes, that's perfect.
Yeah, it's great.
That's completely perfect.
Yeah.
Because just in terms of the sort of creative energy and the sexiness and all the rest of it, you know, it's kind of all in there. And it also frees you up to say this is not intended to be a straight up depiction of what Prince was like or things Prince did, you know. And I can really see a similar thing happening here, whereby you completely dispense with all that idea and just go to town on it.
I think it's a really interesting point, because, and also it's worth mentioning that at the moment there is in pre-production, I think at the moment there's a Michael Jackson biopic.
Yes.
And that is very much going down, obviously, the straight biopic route.
Yeah.
I think what's really interesting to me is my take on this is that this is the Beatles estates wanting to do a proper biopic while they can. Like, you know, we talked before about Paul McCartney seems to be getting these projects out of the way before his time is up.
Yeah.
And I kind of get the impression this probably falls under the category of wanting to have a proper official Beatles biopic out while he is still able to oversee it.
Yes.
And I think that the more playful you get with the casting and the creative choices, the more it opens up the idea that this is still a fun version of the Beatles story and an actual official one would happen, you know, is still up for grabs further down the line.
Right, yeah.
I feel like this is, you know, drawing a line in the sand and saying this is the one. There won't be another one, in which case there's probably going to be a tendency to play things relatively straight.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, or, you know, or get Ringo to play himself, de-aged, you know, de-aging, yes, the Irishman de-aging technology, that kind of thing.
Yeah, because that worked so well for the Irishman.
It did, yeah, flawless. Yeah.
Here's another question that we can speculate about for hours. At what point should the film end in their story, do you think?
Yeah, I thought about that a bit, and I think, listen, again, this depends completely how the thing ends up being treated, which we don't know yet, but I think at the breakup would probably be the thing, you know, because while it would be really interesting to see, there's never really been, you know, something I'd really like to see depicted on film is Ringo's 70s, you know, because he was really not in a good way and he was spiraling. I don't mean like, oh, it'd be great to see, you know, but I mean, we've actually said before that a really good, well-made Ringo documentary would be great to see. Definitely. because it, you know, there's not, that hasn't been shown properly, his life after the Beatles, you know, there's a story there worth telling, you know. But I think narratively speaking, it'd be so hard to kind of watch them all go off in their own threads, how that could be treated, I can't quite picture it. So I would say, you know, as definitively as one can in these things, probably end it where, at the breakup.
I think it makes sense to do that because it's very clear that this is the Beatles story, not the story of John, Paul, George and Ringo, even though it's being treated individually like that. But, you know, I feel like you'll be doing Paul a disservice if you cover the Wings period as a footnote to the Beatles story, you know. That said, I don't know how you end a film satisfyingly with the breakup, because I think one thing is true of the biopic template is that you want things to end on a bit of a triumphant note.
Yeah, true.
In that respect, then, it makes sense to end on the rooftop.
Yeah.
Lord knows we've had plenty of Beatles films that end on a rooftop. That's definitely a Beatles film trope, copyrighted Beatles films podcast. But then if you do that, do you miss the breakup? You know, the other way to go about it is you cover the breakup, and then the triumphant note comes more about how the band were able to reconcile their differences later on in life.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a really interesting creative challenge to end this film satisfyingly at a point that still leaves the audience coming away feeling really positive about the group.
Yeah. That, I mean, you know, this presupposes that it's even going to be done chronologically, you know. Do it backwards, you know. I mean,
you mean like Memento?
Yeah, exactly. Benjamin Button, you know.
That way you could have Ringo and Paul play themselves.
Exactly. God, we're so full of ideas.
We really are.
Sam Mendes really needs to get on the phone.
So we talked a little bit about how the films are, I mean, let's just say it, unlikely to satisfy really diehard fans who are looking to make sure that they used the right brand of string on Paul's bass and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But it is interesting that these films are made, and presumably with some kind of intention behind the planned project beyond just Sam Mendes has a fun idea and everyone signed off on it.
Yeah.
I think that the fact that we have known this kind of announcement might be coming soon for a while says that there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in the Apple Corp world at the moment. And this is sort of the latest in a long line of new releases and ways to keep the Beatles sort of front and center.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do we think it's going to, if it's not necessarily designed to please diehard fans, do we think that there is going to be an aim here to try to get younger generations of fans interested in the group?
Yeah, definitely. I think, so, you know, it's worth thinking about, yeah, the fact that Apple have been for years now very consciously kind of legacy building, making sure that the Beatles' popularity is secured for another generation, you know. I was really interested to see that the Elvis movie, the Baz Luhrmann one, did really well. It was quite critically, and I think commercially did quite well as well.
Mm.
But given that the people in charge of Elvis's estate have kind of missed a trick, really, yeah. in terms of... And from what I understand it, but Elvis memorabilia, the market has completely dropped out for that on places like eBay. You just can't shift the stuff because yeah. there isn't a market for it because the people who were young at the time were not sort of re-engaged when they were older with sort of lots of new remastering and box sets and all that.
Yes,
and we found these early demos and all that kind of stuff. That wasn't there. They didn't really seem to have anyone in charge of that stuff, the Elvis estate. You know, I mean, there are people, as I understand it, who work in marketing now who specialize in sort of legacy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, of like how to keep a band who are split up or who are dead or an artist, how to keep them in the public consciousness exactly with re-releases right. and new things, you know. So
re-releases and new things, and also with rights to music being used across like streaming platforms yeah. and social media platforms yeah. like that. TikTok is such a big instigator now of music sales and streams and downloads and things that yeah. like it's things like that, knowing how to curate a catalogue for it to be used in on those platforms.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there will definitely be an aim here to sort of re-energize a new younger audience, just as the re-release of the Red and Blue albums was at the end of 2023, because the remastering for that was obviously very consciously done to remaster for the way young people listen to it, i.e. through yes. smart speakers and through their phones, you know, so they sound better on that, which is you know, sort of older fans like us will kind of listen to that and think, oh god, what have they done with this, and like this is over and this was never over in this channel before and the bass is too high on this one, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I mean, for the record, I think there are some missteps in those remasters, but in general I quite like them.
Yeah same. Yeah,
but they're not for me, they are for younger fans. Yeah. and that is great, you know?
And we should all be able to agree that is anything that protects the Beatles' legacy and makes their popularity endure is a good thing, regardless of whether or not we listen to the 2018 masters or 2009 masters or the 67 originals. You know, it doesn't really matter to us, does it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I think the other interesting about this film on that note is I wonder if re-engaging audiences with the early parts of the Beatles' career will pave the way to release the new mixes of the earlier albums. Because I think we've said before that it makes sense to do that for Let It Be and White Album and Sgt. Pepper's, but the more you go back to their first albums, the less appeal I think there is for new generations, because there is, you know, the tracks themselves are, I guess, more basic.
Yeah, I suppose. It's because it's very easy to think that, and instinctively that's what I think as well, but then if I think a bit harder about it, I think, well, it's not these while they are pop songs, they are very sophisticated ones.
Mm.
And, you know, it's not like kids don't like pop songs. You know, I mean, pop songs are sort of invented for kids, you know. But
I think they're less layered, though. And I think that's, you know, pop songs are pop songs, you're right. Good pop is good pop. But I think even, you know, simple pop songs that are released today still have layers of instrumentation within them. Mm. And I think that's kind of anything released pre-Revolver. And I guess that's probably why things have got quiet since Revolver release. Since the Revolver re-release. I think that's possibly why it's less about... it's tied into, obviously, the technology required to be able to demix and to then remix those early releases.
Yeah.
But I think also the appeal of re-releasing those, I think that has a relatively narrow audience at the moment. Whereas waiting until after these films are released might help sort of reinvigorate an interest into that early stage of their career.
Yeah, I suppose in particular, because the thing will be, the release of the first film will be obviously trailered and hyped quite a lot, and people will be expecting it. And so if we presuppose that the first film does cover the early era, Hamburg, early Beatlemania, whatever it is, then that is a good jumping off point to re-release some of those songs. And as you say, get them sort of, people using them across TikTok and all the rest of it, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, which totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably about as much as we can possibly speculate, given the given the the very limited amount of information we currently have about this film project. I think, obviously, we will now spend the next 3 years, all of us, everyone, will spend the next 3 years finding out and awaiting and hearing more news about this project as it comes, and how the plotting will work, casting news, glimpses of trailers and shots and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, it's going to be an interesting next few years as we learn how the project develops itself, leading up to 2027, which is the year of the Beatles, because there's going to be no escaping four theatrically released films about the band in 1 year. It just seems nuts to me that we're building up to a year dedicated to the band.
Yeah,
we're going to be out of a job. There's people going to be releasing new podcasts and stuff and everything.
I know, but I think people will always remember which was the original and best, I'm sure.
Beatles Films Podcast, I mean, yes. Yeah. Lucky we got that domain name straight away, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, I hope anyone listening to this has enjoyed our speculative chat about what we think and what we know about the film so far. If you have any thoughts or any ideas about the announcement yourself, please do get in touch with us on all the usual social media platforms. You can reach us at Beatles Films Pod on Facebook and Twitter and Threads and Instagram. And also, please do find us on those platforms and follow us there anyway to find out all of the latest announcements for which films we'll be covering in our new season, which launches next Monday. Shall we say now which film we're starting with? Should we do that?
Well, this is most irregular, but yes, why not? We will be opening season 5 with our look at the 1988 documentary Imagine John Lennon.
There we go. So you can look forward to that next week. And like I say, follow us on all the usual social media platforms to find out every film we'll be covering in the new season after that one. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, please do leave us a 5-star rating or a review on your podcast listening platform of choice. And we will see you next week for the first episode of our new season. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.